Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. It's happening this weekend. It happens every weekend. Moments of joy, moments of hope, and moments of disappointment. Great, great disappointment when people go to view what they hope and think will be their dream home, only to discover it has been sold to someone else. Gerard, good afternoon.
Okay, Joe, how are you?
Good, how are you keeping? You okay?
Not too bad, Joe.
Okay, Ballyfermot. Four-bedroom house, which is unusual in Ballyer. But anyway, well done. Three-bedroom, you put on an extra bed yourself.
We did, well, it was a three-bedroom house, but we got the attic extended, and
we've done a lot of work
to it, kept it up to scratch and kept it nice and clean. We're very proud of it, but we love Ballyfermot. But it's a nice house. It's a nice house, and it's well looked after.
Well done. So you put it up for sale, and interest?
Oh, it was amazing interest. Let's just say it was only up for sale for a week, Joe, and it was sold.
Wow.
But I believe when we put it up for sale, my neighbour told me when we had to go off, when people came to view the house on the Saturday on the 1st, but there's only one viewing when it's a Saturday, and the neighbour next door told me, he said, there was supposed to be 60 people in your house. He said, he said, it could be 100, he said, outside the front garden, all waiting to view the house, he said. He's never seen anything like it. So that's just to give you a hint of what happened that Saturday.
Okay, now, is there anything in it, Gerard, that your corner house? Was there anything in it that would have generated extra interest, or do you think this is normal interest in a house?
I don't know, Joe. It's well maintained. The house is. It's a terraced house. It's not an end house.
Okay.
It's in the middle of the block.
Yeah.
But it's well maintained and well looked after, and we do keep it well.
Okay.
No, there's nothing special about it. It's just an ordinary house.
You know the way I'm thinking in Ballyer, a lot of people have a corner house and they see the corner house, as you probably know, the garden is used to build an extra house. But you didn't have any of those extras, so to speak. This was a terrace house, 60 to 100 people at the first viewing, and sold within a week. And then what happened?
Then what happened was we went over to visit our grandchildren on Wednesday night. And we came back to the house just last Wednesday gone, and my wife happened to see, we have a letterbox outside on the wall of the house, but this was stuffed into the hall door letterbox, a letter, a note, and my wife seen it, and she took it out of the letterbox, and she proceeded to read it, and she said, do you know what this is? I said, no. She said, it's a letter, she says, from a couple that viewed the house, and more or less just poured it to me. They must have sat down and wrote a letter to two strangers, myself and my people that they didn't know, more or less asking them, would we sell them the house or could... I don't know what to say other than to say, Joe, that it's just heartbreaking the way they worded the letter, and that they were telling the story about how they met, how long they've been together, and they said, we viewed your house, we got a good vibe, we spoke to your neighbours on the way up that day, and they said it's a nice area, and what broke my heart the most was, and I have to say I get emotional even thinking about it, is they said, we could see ourselves having a family here because, we want to start a family in that. This we could feel the love in this house, he said. But for two strangers to open up and tell the story, they were let down before. They said last year they were sailed green on another property, and she said, I'm giving up, she says, this girl says. And for our chap says, no, please don't give up, he says. But I just want to highlight this today, Joe, just for the fact that people are sticking letters in your letterbox, and people that they don't know, and I can't, it's
heartbreak.
It's heartbreaking.
Okay, Gerard, say with us, 0818 715 815, joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text. Here is the gist of the letter. Now, we've removed any part of it that might make it identifiable, but I think, your words have given the heartbreak of it. And this is the part of the letter.
Dear owner, I hope you are keeping well. First of all, we want to say sorry if this letter is not of your liking, but we had to give it a go. We just wanted to get in contact to let you know that we fell in love with your house at the viewing. You keep it in such a good condition, and we could feel the love that you put into it over the years. We would like to tell you a little bit about ourselves and our story together, in case this gives us a chance when you're making your decision to sell your house. We met through work and fell in love a number of years ago. We've been in the process of saving for a house for the past 3 years. Our recent effort to purchase a house fell at the final fence. It was heartbreaking. On Saturday, we came to see your home. We are really looking forward to continue building our lives together, and we could picture ourselves having kids and growing our family in your home. We do understand how the market works, and we have to bid for your home. We hope to hear back from you, but if this is not the case, we appreciate you taking the time to read out our letter. Thank you very much.
There's tear stains on that letter somewhere, I can tell you, Gerard.
It's pulled at your heartstrings, Joe. That's what I'm saying. Anyone that has a heart, you'd have to have some sympathy for that couple or for people in the same situation. It's just, I don't know what to say anymore. That's why I said I'm going to get in touch with yourself.
Yeah.
I wouldn't imagine it's an isolated incident.
Is going along. Your wife, they left her full details, obviously. But your wife rang the woman.
She rang the lady last night. She did, yeah.
Fantastic.
And she said thanks very much for calling us. Even the fact that you called us back, she says, really appreciate it. And they said they were they were the second highest bidder on the house.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they weren't the highest. They said, but if that never happened, would be considered. You know what I mean? Would be considered. Yeah. So, but they were really appreciative that we actually rang them back just to say, listen, we got your letter and we read it, and we're so taken aback by it fact that you wrote it,
took a lot.
It's heartbreaking, Joe. It is. Yeah. It's very hard. It's sad. It's very sad for people out there. There's a sense of hopelessness, I think, for people out there trying to get a house and just to start a family. It's not too much to ask to start a family, to have a little home of your own and have your own children and to raise, you know, it doesn't seem possible anymore. I don't know. That's why I said I'll get in touch and send you in the letter yourself and see what you think of that.
And I don't know, when did you move to Ballyfermot, Gerard?
I'm from Ballyfermot, Joe, all my life. I moved to Crumlin, unfortunately, for 2 years, but I'm 63 years of age and I'm 61 years in Ballyfermot, so, but I'm actually moving at the moment. That's why we're selling. We're in the process of moving. Well, it's up for sale at the moment, so I'm moving now. We're downsizing, Joe, so we don't need it anymore, you know, so we're going to a place not too far from where you were brought up, Palmerstown, so there you go.
Well, I was brought up in Clatter Green. And did you buy the house, or was your family renting the house?
No, I came from Deasy's Road originally, Joe. My mother and father were off Deasy's. And I bought that house. Mm. There was only, I think, 30 houses built where I live. It's down the very end of Ballyfermot. That's to give people an idea. But it wasn't a council house. It was a private house.
Okay. But they all started as council houses.
No, this one.
But you remind me of how important, do we need reminding, but this is such a poignant way to do it, Gerard, this letter especially. Yep. And believe it or not, what I have in my bag and what I have in my hand is the deeds to my mother's house in Ballyfermot when she bought it. And she carried them with her everywhere, believe it or not, because she rented a house from 1953, and she lived it until she died 3 years ago. And she eventually, wait for this, people are going, this is the importance of the councils building houses and people trying to better themselves and passing it on to their children. Mabel Duffy and James Duffy, this is their deeds here. I'll tweet it and take out the details. They bought their house off Dublin Corporation on the 15th of October, 1981. Okay? They'd first started renting it in 53. So that's what, nearly 30 years previously.
28 years.
And you know how much she paid for the house? £4,925. And she'd already been offered to buy the house a few years previously for a lower amount, but she couldn't afford it. So she paid off week by week the house and she carried those deeds. And that's the importance of a house to people. And that's what that letter is about from that woman. And her husband, we need a little house. The house that you are in, the three bedroom with the extension, is so similar to many houses in Ballyar. So many houses. And is now out of the reach of so many young couples. Because the councils, why did the council, and we won't go into a political debate here, but why did the council stop building houses? Why? In the Celtic Tiger, what did they do? They put all their money into building big civic offices, award-winning civic offices, when they should have been building houses for people like my mother, this woman here. And they could treasure a house more than anything else, apart from their children, obviously, and their health. They treasure their little house more than anything else to such an extent that they carry
it's
the
their
deeds.
Little castle,
they
Joe.
Carry
it's
the
their
deeds.
Piece of happiness. My home is my castle. It's my piece. That's my home. That's my piece of happiness. That's where I go and I, where people go. A home is a house is a home. You want to have a home around you.
Yeah.
Where if your kids feel safe, they come in from playing and go back out again, like we used to do years ago. And it's not too much to ask to have something like that. Just nowadays, it seems beyond the reach of most people because, as you say, they're being outbid and. Where does it end, Joe? That's what I'd like to know.
You see, the greatest uplift, apart from the whole thing of rearing a farm, the greatest uplift that people can get in their lives in terms of bettering themselves, after education, is to be able to have a house and be able to pass it on to your family. Where will you move to? Or that's already in the pipeline, I presume.
Well, I'm going to Palmerstown, Joe.
Okay. But are you
not going too far, Joe.
Okay, but are you downsizing or what way are you doing it?
Yeah, we're downsizing. Oh, okay. We're going to do it. Yeah, we're downsizing, yeah. But another thing, if I can say this, Joe, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I have a son at home that's 34.
Okay.
I have two children. I have a daughter she has a partner. She's a lovely house in Cluny and I have two lovely grandkids, a beautiful grandchildren. And my son, he's 34.
Okay.
I think he might be listening, but I hope he doesn't mind me. But part of the reason we're selling up is because we need to help him out.
Yeah.
We're trying to give him a leg up, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that's
of course,
what I think
course.
People have to do nowadays. So,
but that's what
I remember when I bought the house, I was in Joe, you don't mind me saying, I bought my house, Sheila and I bought the house. My wife didn't work till my kids were 10. I could pay the mortgage on my wage alone. Yeah. Nowadays, it seems that everyone's working to pay mortgages. And my mortgage was over 20 years. Now they seem to be over 30 and 35. What's happening that people have to work well into their 70s to buy a home now? I know we could talk politics, but I just said it's just so sad that it's beyond the reach of most people now.
Stay with us, Gerard. I know you mentioned your two other children. Did you get many offers on the house? Sounds like you could have been receiving offers in infinitum.
It went from the asking price, Joe, went skyrocketed in maybe an hour or two that day. You know what I mean? On the first time it went live, I don't know the way the system works now with like a bidding system. It just we could see the bidding going on at the time and just went crazy. It is, you know what I mean? There was so many people bidding on it.
Yeah.
60, 70 bids in the first 4 hours or something. It was
wow.
But as I said, we have to move on ourselves. You know what I mean? I feel terrible about the people that were bidding, but it's I'd bring it to your attention about the letter and the maybe the bleakness that people
feel.
Now,
sure, in fairness to the council, they will come back to us, and I should be fair to them. They would say, Joe, you're talking about Ballyfermot. I was up there the other day in Cherry Orchard. They're building in Cherry Orchard. They're building on the old De La Salle school. I know it's a private development and it's apartments, but they say there will be social housing there. There is a lot of building going on, but why isn't it impacting? Why isn't it making a difference? I know one of the reasons is most people don't want to live in apartments. They want a front door and a back door and a small garden front and back, please God. But there seems to be an awful lot of building going on. But it's not impacting on the heartbreak that we're hearing here today.
know, the figures are still going up, and you can see skyscrapers, as you say, apartments going up everywhere, and I don't know, as I say, it's, where does it all end? How are we going to move forward with this? How is people going? People's lives are on hold, Joe. That's what I get out of this.
Yeah.
Young couples that want to start a family, they cannot start, because when you're renting, if you're renting a property, you're just, you're at the whim of the, you know what I mean? Let's say landlords, they could want to sell the property, so you have to ask them to move out. So you cannot, you know what I mean? Your life's put on hold, and people are, I don't know, they're in their 30s and 40s now starting families, it looks like to me, and I mean, it's the generation, I think, being lost here that might never have children, you know what I mean? I might never own a home. Or,
well, we already know, the, according to the CSO, the number of children people are having is, it's must have been 1.8, and it used to be, I know that's the way they do the stats, but the number is dropping dramatically, Jared, stay with us, 0818 715 815 and Joe at rte.ie. And I don't want to harp on about my own family situation, but the leap that getting that house in Claddagreen in 1953 from Dublin City Council, they moved from a tenement to Mountjoy Square, the difference that made in their lives is gargantuan, and our lives as well. Stay with us, Jared, please. Joe at rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. John, you're listening to Jared. You see, you got a similar, well, a similar letter in the same circumstances. Tell us.
Very much so. We received a letter. My mother was recently deceased.
Okay.
And we put the house in the market, as people have to do. It's heartbreaking, but it has to be done. But so we received this letter. We had a big sign outside, a very well-known estate agent, the ones that give their names, are selling the house on our behalf. Big sign with their phone number, with their website, all that stuff outside the house. But we received this letter through the letterbox about a month ago, on the 12th of January.
Okay.
And it said, I'm not going to give you the names. You probably can see it. I've sent it on. It's stuff like, we are Christians. We have children. We're looking for a lovely school, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's kind of a little bit personal. They give their names, they give their numbers and their emails. And we sent this on to the estate agent, as I say, a well-known estate agent. They said they've seen this before. They've contacted these people before. And you can look at the names yourself. And these people, they say, are rather odd. They go and they go to the viewings, mm-hmm. and they kind of go along as up to a certain point, then walk away. But I don't know, maybe the gentleman who's just been on to you, has he sent you a copy of his letter? You could compare, obviously, not, don't leave the names up, but you could compare the two names on the letter that we received that I've sent you a copy of and see if they're the same.
I'm not privy to the letter, so which is appropriate, so I don't know. But you said the estate agent said these letters are a thing, as they say, a thing.
Well, this particular couple, they said they've seen this letter before. Now, it's addressed to dear property owners. So, I mean, obviously, they could be just chucking it through. They could be putting it through. They don't address the name of the address of the house. They just said dear property owners, you know? So it's kind of odd.
Yeah. Jared, did you doubt... Well, your wife spoke to this woman, so there's no doubt in your mind.
I don't doubt the sincerity of that, Joe. My wife spoke to the lady last night. She rang her last night, and she picked up the phone, and she spoke back to her, and there was someone at the end of the line, and, you know what I mean? It was. She said, listen, if the top bid falls through, she said, would you reconsider us, because we were second best. So there was someone there, and
Child. I don't doubt the sincerity either, but I just to when I heard you saying it, so I think it's Joe, your name is, my name is John, lovely to talk to you. When I heard you saying it, it's not long a battle with us. And it is odd, because we've got this letter, but it's addressed to dear property owners. It gives the people's name, their emails, their numbers. There's a kind of a personal thing about your lovely house as meeting our expectations. We are a serious family, Christian, Catholic, Christian, that kind of stuff. And they even say what they work at. We didn't contact him. We just put it, said, listen, the estate agent, this is, you know, all queries should be going through you. And they said they've seen this couple do this before, And they said that this couple bring them up to a certain level and then walk away. That's all we were told, and they looked after it. So I don't know, maybe if you want to get onto the producers, I've sent them a copy of the letter. Maybe you just want to.
No, I don't, I don't even think we need to go that far, because Jerry, was there any mention of religion in the letter you got?
No, there was no mention of religion. The letter, as I said, I sent it in to your producer. I photocopied it this morning and sent
John,
it in. But
just to come back to John, why your estate agent said, "Oh, this I've seen this letter before."
Yeah, no, they've seen these people before. These two people. Yeah.
So what is their motivation?
I have absolutely no idea, because
maybe they're trying to buy a house, and every little helps.
We can't sell the house privately, Joey. If you contract, if you sign a contract with an estate agent, that estate agent can, if you want to get legal about it, can actually sue you if you do a private sale behind their backs. You can't do it.
But can you say to the estate agent, "I'll go for the underbidder"?
You could if you wanted to, but they haven't even come across it and said, mm-hmm. why would they undercut the estate agent? That's the bit that I don't get. Anybody that's buying a house and the house is there with a huge big sign outside it, with the name of the estate agent, a very well known estate agent, with the phone numbers, with the emails, why would they put this letter through? It just seems a really odd thing to do. I don't get it.
I presume there must be some houses. Because auctioneers, I presume there's some houses going for under the asking price at the moment.
I couldn't tell you. I've only bought one house my entire life, and I'm part selling my deceased mother's house. So this, I don't have much experience in it. But it just seems to me, even in my rudimentary experience, would know that if I see a house with an estate agent signed outside it, that's the person I contact. You know, I wouldn't even occur to me to put it out through the box. So I wouldn't know, why would you do that?
Okay, say it is joe@rt.ie, 51551.
Joe, hello.
Jared, you're going.
I just want to say the letter that I received was somebody sat down and wrote it in ink and pen. And I know it was a genuine letter as far as I'm concerned. The letter was.
Here.
You know what I mean? It wasn't printed out. It was somebody actually sat down and wrote this in their own handwriting. And said what they said on the letter, what you read out that time was spoken on the radio. So I'm not, as far as I'm concerned, 100% genuine.
And she was genuinely moved when your wife took the trouble and
ringing her.
The humanity to ring her and explain and talk to her. Yeah. Stay with her, Jerry.
She said, listen, thanks very much for the call.
Noel, joe@rt.ie. Noel, go ahead. You're listening.
How are you doing?
Yeah, you worked in building houses, was it?
I've worked on construction of houses since I was 18 years of age.
Okay.
And I'm in my 60s today. But I worked on a particular site back in 82 where new houses were being launched at the time. Mm. And there were 47,000 for a new house. Fabulous house. There was an elderly man on the site at the time, and he said, "Oh God, the poor people having to buy those, if they spend the rest of their life paying for that house.
Yeah.
It's an outrageous price." Same house today is 1.5 million plus. That's the nature of things. It's always hard starting out. It always has been.
Is it relatively and comparatively much harder now?
Yes, Joe, it is. My mortgage for when I bought a house in the late 30s, I had a £30,000 mortgage in the 80s. My mortgage repayments was £500 a month. So it is relative, yeah. It was even more difficult. So I don't wash into the idea how hard it is to buy a house. Yes, they're expensive, and they're expensive to build. But remember, and you probably remember when people bought houses back then, you bought a house, there was no curtains, carpets or flooring or anything like that. You moved into it. But now people expect a lot more, rightly so. We've moved on in society and that. But you didn't go on a holiday, or I didn't go on two or three holidays a year. Young people are doing this, but they still expect to have a house, to be able to buy a house. It's not easy. And everyone has to make sacrifices. And the problem, you can't build, I get sick listening to politicians and Mary Lou and all these talking nonsense about the cost of building. They haven't a clue.
They're challenged. There's always robust debates about housing on all sides.
It's nonsense talk. They never talk to people that are on the ground that know how to build houses and what it costs to build houses. There isn't a tradesman in this country today getting less than 2,000 a week. Mm-hmm. That's the reality. You can't get a tradesman. There was a survey done years ago. It takes about 3 people 1 year to build a house. So if you want to build 10,000 houses, mm-hmm. you need 30,000 people.
And what about technology? We had it this week, 3D housing and modular housing.
Yeah, do you
housing.
Know how long it took to build that, those 3 houses?
Okay.
That took 18 months to build 3 houses. You'd build them conventionally in about 9 months. So it's nonsense talk.
Yeah, but you don't... Yeah, but
it's a labour-intensive industry, whether you like it or whether you don't like it. And people need to get that in their head. It's labour intensive.
What about the modular housing where the guts of the house are the first fix, the second fix...
Come on the back of a lorry. Correct. This still has to be made in a factory.
It goes back to the Henry Ford principle of the production line. The production line, which he originally robbed the idea from, or... from an abattoir, but is there no way you could build a production line and bring them on the back of a truck in this world we live in with improved material?
We're doing it as best available. We're using as good of technology to build houses as they're using anywhere in the world. The bottom line is, you go into a field, you've got to put in roads, you've got to put in services, you've got to do all that work. That's a lot of donkey work, hard physical work. There's machines and man. That's all that can do it. You can't do it in a factory.
And the machines are getting better.
It is, but it still has to be. The machine has to be driven by a man. You know. There's a lot of problems here. There's no joined up thinking. Everyone would blame everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a planning thing here. I was talking to a person that did housing in Germany.
Sorry, Joe, about that shop. I have to go back to work, but I only wanted to come on and just talk about the letter and the human side of things. But thanks very much for
thank you,
this
old
subject,
pal. Yeah, I'll see you soon, Jared. Mind yourself.
See you then.
Look after yourself and your wonderful family. You're now going into late debate territory or whatever, which is fine. The planning system is a mess. Everyone knows it. Everyone knows it, and nobody will do anything about it. All the politicians know it. They all agree on it.
I know people today with houses completed since October, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sold, and they can't get a water connection.
Yeah.
The infrastructure here is disgraceful.
6 months ago, the price of... being connected by Ishka Éireann for 500 yards was, I think it was, you would have built a pipeline to an oil pipeline cheaper per metre.
This might be a popular thing I'm going to say. The civil service is running this country and they're not doing a great job. You take the core civil servants, the doctors, or the nurses, the guards, the teachers, those people are working their butts off. But there's too many pin pushers in there not doing their job. Mm. You try to get through to some of the offices today, there'll be nobody there to answer. There's no value for money
We're told that Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, is going to coordinate number one priority. And he knows, he's from a background in Cork. He didn't have money either. His father was on the buses. He knows what it's like, and he knows he must see. Well, I know he does from his public interviews, but it's how do you get a grip on it? I understand there's people. No one has been able to get a grip on it.
Unfortunately, Joe, the tail is wagging the dog in that the elected politicians really don't have any say. It's the civil servants that have the say. And I'm not a Trump admirer or anything like that. And I don't condone anything.
Well, that's allowed. You're allowed. Don't be afraid to say you admire a certain politician.
I don't condone what he's doing. But maybe he's right about thinning out the civil service over there. If you have, like, there's not the only people in the country that can do nothing and can never be fired is a civil servant. So, like, it's you know, like, when you have people that are unaccountable for what they do, if you don't do your job right, I'm sure you have to answer to somebody. I have to answer to somebody. They don't have to answer. And that's where the fundamental problem is. When you have non-accountability of people in the country, you have a problem.
And I take your point as well, Des. Des, you can put a plug in a wall, I presume. You can plumb
no,
a bit.
No, I can't.
You
can't? No, okay. Not about electrics. I don't want to
no,
know
but
about
you can,
it.
No, but you can do something. You can do something to build
of
a house.
I can do what I have to do, yeah. But if I need a plumber or I need an electrician, I get them.
And there's not enough of them being told this is a really fulfilling, admirable profession.
They need to go and start bringing in people from third world countries that have no work and allow them into Europe. This is more Europe bureaucracy. Okay. Stopping people working.
Okay, Des, good to meet you, Margaret. That's Des O'Halloran and Kerry. Joan, sorry for holding you, Joan. Good luck, Des.
Good afternoon, Joe. I'll keep this brief because I'm out and about in the rain with the dog. Okay. I smiled when I heard you speaking with that lovely man about the house and the letter.
Yeah,
he got.
Gerard, yeah.
Because twice my elderly mother has got a letter like that and her house wasn't up for sale.
Okay.
But it was so close to what was written in the letter that she got that I did find it amusing. The last one was about last autumn and it said to the owner and it said that this couple had been walking by her house over the last couple of years and fell in love with it. A little story of how they met and how they hoped to raise a family. And how they would love it if she would consider bypassing any, you know, estate agents or anything and consider selling the house to them. Now, because they don't know who the owner is, there was no he or she in it.
Okay.
But and then it was a mobile number at the end. Okay. But that was the second time that was put in her door.
And how did she, Joan, forgive me. What's wrong with that? Was your mother upset?
Oh no, we just ignored it. But we just got the feeling that maybe this is being put in every door, you know, and that's okay if that's what I just wondered, was it a genuine young couple, you know, or was it, you know, a business thing? You know, are trying to I suppose soften people's hearts, you know?
Or is it that people or is it as Gerard fully believes, and they spoke to the person who wrote the letter.
Yeah,
that was a genuine housing crisis.
Yeah, but we just got the feeling because it was the second time, and especially if the house wasn't up for sale, we just got the feeling that it was.
Is your mother still in the house?
Oh yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So there you go.
Okay. Where are you going? Where are you going with your dog in the rain?
Home. Thank you, Joe.
And is he bringing you home, or you bringing him home, Joan? I suspect he's saying, get me back in front of the fire with a bit of ham. Okay, Joan, good to meet him.
Exactly.
Good.
Thank you.
Joe, stay with us. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Judy, good afternoon. Brian, oh, Judy, sorry, you're on my screen. Brian, good afternoon. Okay, Judy is there now. Judy, sorry, I'll come back to you in a sec, Brian. Bear with me. But Judy has a very important point that a number of people noticed and a number of people were baffled that the Food Safety Authority of Ireland had not acted more strongly on this. Tell us the story, Judy, please.
So my name's Judy. I have a gorgeous 8-year-old son called Oliver who's got a severe peanut and nut allergy.
Okay.
We saw there during the week that there was, I believed it was a recall of the Donegal catch salmon with the spicy sauce. I believe you'll probably correct me on that.
In a barbecue, Four Atlantic salmon, they're a great company, Four Atlantic salmon fillets in a barbecue spice marinade.
Yeah.
And there was a statement. And tell us about a statement. And then what the Food Safety Authority of Ireland didn't do.
So the statement was that they discovered that there was undeclared peanut in the fish.
Okay.
So they put out an allergy alert for that, which I follow the Food Safety Authority of Ireland on Instagram because of my son's allergy.
Yeah, of course.
So the alert was to reduce the presence of peanut traces. I believe then they'd recall it, but the Food Safety Authority did an assessment and found that the levels were low, deemed safe, to not recall the product, and that that peanut-sensitive, I can't remember the wording now, but people who are sensitive to peanuts should be aware of the contamination.
Yeah, I have the statement here. In the case of, this is from the Food Safety Authority of Ireland, which is not to be confused with Safe Food Ireland. In the case of, in the case of the Donegal Catch Food Allergen Alert, Green Isle Foods provided more data on Tuesday last, 11th of February, regarding the levels of peanut detected. The levels detected were below the safe limit. However, the FSAI, Food Safety Authority, risk assessment determined that the food allergen alert was still necessary to warn peanut-sensitive consumers of the associated risks. The food allergen alert remains in place. The actions taken regarding the Donegal Catch food allergen alert were in line with all our food allergen alerts, and there was no deviation from our procedures. A food business can decide to recall a food product at its own discretion if they deem it necessary. I presume one of the, what do you think of that line? There was only the levels that the levels detected of peanut were below the safe limit. How do you hear that, Judy? And how does your son hear it?
It's, to me, it should be black and white. Either there's presence of peanut or there's not. Yeah, my son has never been studied in a lab to find out how much peanut he can tolerate before reacting to it. And I take umbrage the word of peanut sensitive. My son's not peanut sensitive. He's highly allergic to peanuts, as in he could go into anaphylactic shock, which, Joe, you know this, could be unimaginable could happen.
Yeah.
So if it is below the safe levels, why are you telling us to be careful? It's black or white. There's peanut in it or there's not. There's peanut there, they should recall it and then change the labelling on to say there's peanuts, there's, you know, they contain traces or there's peanuts in the recipe. This is a freezer item, Joe. This is going to go in people's freezers until October, long after this recall or this safety alert is going to be forgotten about.
And a recall, by definition, would generate much more publicity for a start, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
When a product is recalled, it normally makes all the newspapers and the news bulletins. But at this stage, they did. At this point, they didn't recall it. They just put out a warning.
Now, Joe, the only treatment available to my son in Ireland right now for his peanut allergy is avoidance. That's what we're told.
Yeah.
We are to avoid all foods that have peanut in them. Now, I can do my due diligence. I can check ingredients lists. I can tell people serving us in restaurants that he's got a nut allergy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm essentially trusting people who don't know my son or don't know anything about his allergy and that he's possibly anaphylactic to provide him with food that doesn't have a peanut in it. But for them to leave a food to be sold in supermarkets across the country that may have peanut in it, you know, either it's there or it's not. It should be black or white. It should not be if you're peanut sensitive. He's not sensitive to peanuts. He doesn't get a sick tummy or, you know, after eating peanuts. He could have an anaphylactic reaction requiring an EpiPen and a visit to the ED. It's either there or it's not. And it should be simply like that. That just causes confusion. It also causes confusion to people who don't have nut allergies. If my son's at a play date or if he's somewhere else, the people who aren't as up to date as I am, you know, how can they make that call? It baffles me. Absolutely baffles me.
Okay. Anne Walsh is there. Anne, good afternoon.
Hello. Hi.
You're listening to this. You're very welcome. What do you think of what Judy is saying? This should have been a full recall.
I totally agree with what Judy is saying because, okay, so the FSAI issue alerts and you can sign up for allergen alerts with them. But in this case, they've put the information up on the website and they've just said below batches of Donegal Catch contain peanut residue, which is possibly not safe. And that's all the information they've given. So as a parent, I'm like, well, what does that mean? They didn't state on their website, which if they had, it would have been more helpful that they had assessed the product and determined that the levels were possibly too low to avoid a risk, to cause a risk. But, you know, like for parents, putting it up saying it could be unsafe is not really that helpful, because unless I get in touch with the Food Safety Authority, which I did do, I get in touch with their consumer line, they didn't call back yet, then I, you know, contact the product or whatever. Because otherwise, as Judy says, you have this product in your freezer for months and do you eat it, do you not eat it? And like the other issue is really awareness. A lot of new parents whose kids are diagnosed with life-threatening allergies usually end up in A&E with their child, you know, potentially having a fatal allergic reaction. They haven't the foggiest idea that you can sign up to the FSAI for food safety alerts.
And it's worth pointing that out. If you go onto the FSAI website, you can sign up for allergen alerts in this technological world, which is brilliant, we live in.
Yes, but there needs to be more awareness around that. Maybe, you know, every time a new parent is diagnosed, they're told that at their first appointment. Maybe the supermarket can push out allergen alerts through their loyalty cards. Mm-hmm. You know, they can do, you know, there should be, like, what about all the parents who are sitting at home who have that product in their freezer and haven't heard this? Like, I run, you know, run a business, Allergy Lifestyle, I run social media pages. And before Christmas, there was a huge withdrawal that went on for months from September to November with products that were contaminated, mustard contaminated with peanut powder. It got to the point that there were so many alerts every day, 10 or 15, that both the UK and Irish Food Safety Authority just said, OK, anyone with peanut allergy, don't eat anything with mustard. But yet, through my social media channels on Allergy Lifestyle, I still came across people, you know, 2 or 3 months later going, oh, my son, you know, ate this. He normally has a reaction, but he's had a reaction followed by, you know, 50, you know, members of the thing going, well, probably look at it and see, does it contain mustard? I mean, not everyone is aware that these alerts are available. So how do you get to the people who have this product in their fridge and don't know?
Yeah. And I'll go back to what the FSAI say. They obviously have the state power, but they also say a food business can decide to recall a food product at its own discretion if they deem it necessary. Now, it might have been, that's up to Green Isle, but it might be better for them to recall it and leave out the confusion about this phrase peanut sensitive, which is upsetting, rightly so. Upset is too small a word for it. Christine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Again, a parent. You're obviously very careful when you're out shopping. What do you think of this turn of events where the FSAI didn't recall, they just said, be careful if you're peanut sensitive?
I get no comfort from their message. I think it's appalling. You know, there's no alternative for peanut allergy patients other than strict avoidance. We depend on our regulatory authorities to, you know, protect that, and that we have kind of comfort in the ingredients and packaging. And I think it's appalling.
What do you think? Do you think they should have recalled it, obviously?
I absolutely think they should have recalled it. I think it's a life-threatening issue. You know, like one of your callers said, it's not that these people get a sick tummy. This is a life-threatening anaphylactic reaction situation. And we don't have any therapies in Ireland. There is no alternative other than, you know, watching labels, reading labels. Yeah. You know, like as the mother of an allergic child, I am very fastidious with my shopping, you know, looking at labels. Yeah. But my child eats in other houses. He's on play dates. Yeah. He's on, you know, kind of visiting grandparents. You know, there is a wide community effect. Yeah. It's a huge worry.
And then the May contains, as you know.
The May contains,
which is so many companies just throw it on at times, it seems, on the back of a product just to cover themselves, may contain peanut. Yeah. That's how worried they can be, but it eliminates a lot of food for a lot of people. The phrase, the food allergen alert was still necessary to warn peanut-sensitive consumers of the associated risk. Now, you're saying any peanut, it's not an associated risk. It is a direct risk to your child.
It's a direct risk, you know, and some people have airborne allergies to peanuts. You know, you're not supposed to consume peanuts on a flight. You know, this is directly contaminating food that will be ingested by potentially peanut allergy sufferers. It is appalling. It is, you know, it's straightforward as far as I'm concerned. This product should be recalled.
Okay, when did you first spot your own child, Christine?
So my son is Ryan. He's 11. He's almost 12. He's a kind, gentle, smart boy.
Yeah.
We first identified his allergies when he was about 5.
Okay.
So it has been a long road. It's very stressful as a parent. It had a huge impact on his life and that of his siblings. It's every day. You know, even, for example, say he's... he was travelling with his school to a soccer blitz. He loves sport. He's a really active life. But I get stressed this morning that his EpiPens travel to the match with him, that he'll remember them, that he won't leave them.
Yeah.
That if there's treats at the match, maybe, you know, someone will, produce a packet of biscuits. You know, these people mightn't be aware that my son has allergies. You know, will Ryan have access to an ingredient list? Will he be able to, you know, check? Will a teacher check? If, like, worst come to worst, if Ryan did experience a reaction, would there be someone there with him that would be able to administer his medication? That's just one day. That's just a typical day.
Yeah, 24/7.
You know, and allergy children, like, are typically, they're well. They are, healthy, well children. So I suppose it doesn't really tug on the heartstrings so much because their vulnerability isn't very obvious. So it's any chance to raise awareness and to, you know, keep our children safe is so important.
Okay, stay with us. Orla is on WhatsApp, joe@rt.ie, 51551 text. Orla, you say, well, what do you think of this statement from the Food Safety Authority where it's an alert, it's not a recall?
I mean, first of all, Joe, I think on behalf of all of us, thank you for taking an interest in it, and you seem to genuinely know so much about what the whole allergy community in Ireland are going through. These type of recalls the lack of recall is insufficient. I spend my entire life checking labels. My daughter is now a preteen, she's 12, and it's very difficult for them on a whole, just being that child, in her words. She's a very happy, sporty, outgoing kid. But she's sick of being that child, and you go to a party and you have to check labels. And for example, I think as Anne mentioned, the mustard situation towards the end of last year, you're then going to a house and you're not just explaining the peanut thing. You're then having to say, oh, and do you know if there was mustard powder in any of the dinners? You're then adding additional fears into it. If something is clearly recalled, at least it's clear that it needs to be removed. You definitely can't have it. No child is sensitive to peanuts. You can either eat them or you can't.
So should the FSAI not have a policy of, if in doubt, get it out?
100%.
Absolutely.
Like, these kids are... I'll be honest, I'm not taking away from any child who's younger than my daughter. Sally was diagnosed when she was 6 months old. I know it's so hard. I'm now in a phase where she has to be responsible for her own allergy and what these kids are going through. Like, is Sally actually going to now have to check labels of peanut sensitive foods as well as foods that contain peanuts? It's very unfair on the children of this country to have to put that on them, on the teenagers, as well as the kids and the parents of the kids.
But I'm also thinking that it's only God catch one of the great innovative brands in the last 25 years in Ireland, owned by a great company, big company now, Green Isle, through various iterations over the years from the 1960s and all, the great company. It would not detract one bit from Donegal Catch and the brand if Green Isle were to say it. They say it's the FSAI say we're okay, but if Green Isle were to say no, we'll ask for a recall. On the basis of, if in doubt, we'll take it out.
Exactly.
The world we now live in, one, on the one hand, there's great benefits of technology and allergen alerts and WhatsApp groups, and more and more teachers and schools and young people are aware of. I can't bring a peanut sandwich into school with me today because we're in a mixed class, and we're told in the mixed class one of our pals has a peanut allergy. And children are brilliant on it. But as you say, four Atlantic salmon fillets and a barbecue sounds gorgeous, as you, to the consumer who doesn't have a peanut allergy. They'll go into a freezer and could make an appearance 6 months hence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They could be out in the summer and that nobody... If you're not in a house that has an allergy, we could go to a friend's house in summer for a barbecue. And that, like you say, could have been in the freezer for some time. And they won't have paid attention to... I mean, it's not even massive news at the moment. It's not like... I'd say if you asked my best friends, they wouldn't know about it. Mm. So they're not going to pay attention to it now. And then they're going to serve it to us in 4 months' time. And it'll have been forgotten about. Get it off the shelves.
Okay.
But I think these kids... I think there's a lack of understanding maybe as to what these kids are going through. You're talking about kids that these preteens are, and teenagers. Imagine, Joe, when you had your first kiss, imagine having to ask that person if they had had peanut butter that day.
Okay.
I actually can't imagine anything worse.
It's all pervasive, and I know pals of mine who you had to go into when they'd get asked for an egg or whatever, they'd say, "Do you mind if we go into the kitchen and check the pan?" That various things happened that the children were allergic to, and most chefs and kitchens were open to it, and I think most people would be open to it and wouldn't. The shares in Green Isle wouldn't go through the floor if they had to recall, because there is a little, there is a worry. There's no such thing as a gradation of worry when it comes to peanut allergies. Mm. You're worried full stop. And there's no measurement in terms of gradation of hurt that can be inflicted because of a peanut allergy. But four Atlantic fillets, the barbecue spice marinade, Donegal catch, if there is a worry, could they not ask people just to take it out and send it back?
And you'll say, Joe, I think the problem in this country as well with allergies is that there isn't really even a proper voice for people with allergies and dealing with this on a day-to-day basis. Like you have, you know, the Asthma Society do brilliant work, diabetes, epilepsy. There's nothing for people with allergies and anaphylaxis. You're just left on your own in this void. We kind of end up finding each other through social media groups and supporting each other. But there's no line, easy line to government, no easy line to the HSE looking for, for the drugs to be sanctioned. There's nobody... There's no organisation that issues out to its entire database, here you go, people with allergies, this has been called or it's still on the shelves, whatever the situation is. There's nobody, looking at training in schools. There's such a void for people managing this condition on a day-to-day basis and the impact it has on the children's lives, and the families, it's not easy, when they're toddlers and they go to creche and you're worrying they're eating the wrong thing. It's not easy when they're in school and they get excluded from birthday parties because other parents are afraid of the allergies. Mm. It's not easy when they're teenagers and they're out socialising and, as Judy said, that they have to ask a boy or whoever, have you eaten peanuts today? Can you imagine doing that as a 14 or 15-year-old? It's not easy then when they're young adults and they're in college and all their friends want to go to a restaurant and the restaurant won't cater for them. And it's not easy when they want to fly and you have to ask them to make announcements. And that's embarrassing. My daughter, not embarrassing, but, my daughter went to Australia yesterday for an Erasmus. She's 20 now and she got to the airport and she did get on the plane, but they were giving her a guff, about her allergy. We had all the things, the letters from the doctor and everything else. They put her in a row on her own and they said she could only board the plane if she agreed that it was an airborne allergy and it was her own responsibility. Now, she's 20 years of age and, that's a worry for me, but it's a worry for her. But it also put a negative thing on her first trip away, And she had two more flights then. She was stopping students. Obviously, we'll try and get the cheapest flight stopping in Istanbul. And then we're going, we tell the next leg of the journey, because if we do, they might let her on. If we don't tell them and something happens, I suppose you can't really emphasise the amount of ways it impacts your life every single day. And I feel like there's no voice. We need an allergy and anaphylaxis society in Ireland.
And it's not as if the Food Safety Authority don't have to get publicity, because they're on, I think it's at 1 o'clock once a month when they announce we shut this Chinese for 24 hours AB. Exactly. They're well able to do that. And I'm sure they benefit. People think they're doing a great job, which they are. But on this thing, this peanut sensitive comment is bizarre. Suzanne, you say the message has to be crystal clear. Suzanne.
Oh, hi, Joe. Hi, Joe. Yes, absolutely. And I want to say, first of all, thank you as well to the other mums who've come on to talk about the subject, and to you, Joe, for raising it.
And to the programme, to talk it up. Yes. Yeah.
It's a really important issue, and we have children. My son is 17 years of age, and I know those other mums and dads around the country will understand when I say that the fear that is in you every single day they walk out the door, especially as they get older, because you know, when they're younger we have some, you know, much more control about what goes into their mouths, but. And then they start socialising, the other lady was saying, and going out and on their own. They constantly have to check everything. A 17-year-old boy who has to draw attention to himself all the time. There's a self-consciousness aspect about it as well. And the awareness is growing, but I don't think it's growing fast enough. And I do think we need an advocate for this issue, because it is... It's a growing issue. Definitely a growing issue. So I definitely think that there has to be absolute clarity. There is no. My son had an anaphylactic reaction when he was 4 years of age. He ate a quarter of a pistachio nut.
Right.
And I can't tell you the terror and the fear and the horror of it all. And no mother ever wants to have to go through that experience of witnessing their child in such a distressing state. It's a constant worry.
And as you say, peanut sensitive is not a statement that's of any use to children who have peanut allergies.
No, it's not good enough. It's just not good enough.
And the message it sends to the food manufacturers, you know, kind of is like this isn't really taken seriously, and that we'll tolerate this kind of small level of contamination.
This is a statement from the, I just get it through with the statement from the Department of Health. The Food Safety Authority of Ireland is responsible for coordinating the enforcement of EU and Irish food law in Ireland. We know that. Currently, there's no cure for food allergy. We know that. That's why we recall products where there is a doubt. Lifetime avoidance of the relevant food or ingredient is required to protect consumers sensitive to such foods. Lifetime avoidance. This is why accurate food labelling and allergen declarations are important to consumers to make informed choices. But is
Joe,
it?
Can I just add
no,
the
but
point
just
there,
can we respond? Given that the department won't come on, and they just want these statements read out willy nilly, there's accurate food labelling. The word they use, the FSA use in their statement, is not an accurate description. Peanut sensitive consumers is not an accurate description of children who could die from an anaphylactic shock from peanuts. Sorry. If they want to play, if they want to go on about it, the English language, let they spread the word. The FSAI is part of their remit as well. Sorry, who was...
It was me, Joe. Just to go back, the Department of Health saying there's no cure for peanut allergy. Department of Health are very aware of a drug called Palforzia that isn't a cure for peanut allergy, but can treat somebody's peanut allergy. And it is not available in Ireland. It's available in the UK, most of Europe and America. Okay. And the NCPE have been reviewing it since 2022. Now, the drug company now have pulled out negotiations due to stock issues, which I don't believe. But
the HSE is committed to providing access to as many medicines as possible in as timely fashion as possible from the resources available. The HSE received a complete application for pricing reimbursement on the 30th of March 22, you're right, from Immune Therapeutics, the applicant for Palforzia. This application remains under consideration. We're now into March 24. The HSE CPU proposed a meeting with the applicant to discuss the HSE drugs group recommendation. The applicant communicated to the HSE CPU, it doesn't tell me here what CPU means, in October 24 that they wished for the application for Palforzia to be paused until the end of 25.
Yeah.
The HSE cannot make any comment on possible outcomes. Okay, Judy and Christine, Suzanne, and your brilliant, brilliant families, thank you so much. And all of there on WhatsApp. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mairead O'Doherty, Mairead, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. Hi. I came in a little bit late to that conversation.
No worries.
But so I missed all the labelling information, but I'm coming from a slightly different perspective on this,
okay.
I think. I have a daughter who's had two anaphylactic reactions in the past. She's 8.
Okay.
At my most recent meeting with them in Dublin, I won't say the consultant's name or anything, but she's fantastic, and with the nurses and stuff there, they said it's very important that... No, first, sorry, the consultant said it's really, really important that we as parents don't instill any or try to prevent any anxiety around food in our children.
Yeah.
That they know, like as the consultant said to my daughter, you have the cure in your pocket, in your, you know, in your bag for
the
your
pen,
whatever.
The EpiPen, yeah.
Yeah, the pen.
Brilliant,
whereas
brilliant.
For any other illness, any other condition, there is nothing as valuable as adrenaline to a child like that. And that all of our conversations around food, when they're going to parties, when they're going away, that they're given the skills and the confidence to know that they can put steps in place themselves and have their EpiPens there at the side to prevent anything serious happening to them. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Of course
from?
I do, yeah.
And that, like, there's a couple of different things as well that I'd like to say, that there is no such thing as an airborne peanut allergy. Yes, there's touch and scent, but generally it's dose dependent. The higher the dose, the higher the chances of a serious reaction. The other thing as well, that food labels may contain nuts. Again, the advice is that the children cannot avoid that food because it's on everything. It's like you say, it's there to cover themselves. So may contain traces of nuts is not a sufficient enough warning for children or people to avoid it. And that, again, that's advice from my consultant and their department in Crumlin. And all the evidence says, again, in another one, that no nut zones, like in schools, it doesn't work. Like, accidents happen, things still happen, and the children are to be the ones that are taught.
Okay, and I hope today, through the various interactions, more and more people will be aware of this.
Yeah,
and they'll be aware that there is a pen and there is an EpiPen, and it is so important. And even if the child, for whatever, it could be age, is unaware of how to use the pen or is unable for whatever reason, that's kicked in too quickly, that people will be able to grab the anaphylactic pen, the EpiPen,
and use it,
which would be brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I know as she gets older, it may become harder, maybe different, but I'd be hoping when she's 12 or 13 and she's going on a bus to a match, that I won't need to be worried, like that she will just go, look, if she's unsure if it's in the food or not, she just won't eat it.
Yeah, and if God forbid something did happen, that her buddies on the bus would know.
Yeah.
Stand back, let Conor Murray, because
she'll
that's
be
your
able to administer let, it herself
yeah,
at that
yeah,
stage.
Let her do it and give her privacy for a few minutes, and we'll hold her hand and make sure everything is okay.
Exactly. And adrenaline is a really safe
drug. The more people that know about it, the better.
Yeah, and I mean, every month we check her EpiPens, we check their in date, we tell her, we remind her what she says to an adult, if she's in contact, if somebody hands her something at a party, she just has to say the question, is there coconut or peanuts in that? So they're her two serious allergens. And I know every parent is coming from the same place, we just are worried about our children, but I really do think... Like that, I hope I won't be worried about my children when she's 13 or 14, that she'll know what she can and can't eat,
or that
she'll at least just avoid it if she's unsure, and that she won't be anxious about it, you know.
And that's really important.
The consultant said that is a big issue that with her patients, that they're all developing kind of anxiety.
Okay,
we don't want that.
If we do want anxiety, and nobody wants any anxiety in anyone's life,
we want if
there is a worry about a product being produced, that the state authority can deal with it. Mairead, go to Míle Maith, get us Mairead O'Doherty, Anne Walsh and Judy, kind regards to you. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe@rt.ie. Ciarán, you were a chef in a previous life, and you say so you can speak from both sides because your son has a peanut allergy.
Yes, Joe. It's nice talking to you.
Likewise. And what's it like in the kitchen? Is it an alert? Is it red alert?
It is really when people come in. I've dealt with it in America and here in Ireland. You have to be vigilant all the time. It's kind of hard at times. It's actually got better in the last maybe 10 years because of with the HSE and the environmental health officers coming in and making sure that all your records are in order. And you have to list all the allergens. So it has got better, but chefs still have to be on the alert all the time because there can be mistakes made in the kitchens like anywhere else. We're all human.
Of course,
But you'd have to be very vigilant, and okay. We would always ask, you know, if someone had, make sure you make, especially with the allergies, they can be life-threatening. So it's a difficult one.
And how's your son doing? Has he had any incidents or scares?
He's had a couple. Thanks be to God, not too severe. We've had a couple of hospital ones, but it was just for safety precaution, really, to make sure that when they have an allergy and you have a reaction and the EpiPen is used, you have to be very careful that it can happen again.
Okay.
So you have to be kept under observation for a while. So, but no, thanks be to God, it's been great. My wife is extremely good at keeping him informed and making sure that when he goes away on his own, that he has the EpiPens with him. It was the same at school, it was the same at sports. You always had to make sure that they were nearby because it's so important.
And how did you discover, Ciarán, that your son had this allergy?
We were eating in a Chinese restaurant.
Okay.
And he had chicken satay off of the all-in-one buffet one evening.
Yeah.
And was fine when he got home till he got extremely sick. And we knew then that he was after... We always knew he didn't like the smell of peanuts. But then we decided to go and get it checked out, and we did. And we found out that he has a nut allergy. Not a peanut, but we think it's more peanut as opposed to a nut allergy because they can be ground or tree nuts.
Okay, I know that, yeah.
So they can be different, yeah. But we are very careful, thanks be to God. But I can understand all those people calling in. It's very frustrating. I find the worst for me is the labelling on packaging.
Okay, so what the initial call was from the parents saying the Food Safety Authority of Ireland statement and their decision not to recall was inadequate, and said their statement they put out saying the food allergen alert was still necessary, that's what they issued, an alert, not a recall, to warn peanut-sensitive consumers of the associated risk. What do you think of that? A fine line you have to walk between an alert and a recall.
Yeah, it's something that I wouldn't be real au fait with. I understand both sides of it. I would like to think that they would have recalled it, to be honest with you, because if there's any doubt at all in their minds that the product had been interfered with from a nut point of view, well, and it was unsafe for human consumption, well, then that's a call they have to make. I prefer they probably did, but the fact that they sent out an alert would keep us all on our toes anyway, to make sure that we didn't order or buy Donegal Catch, you know.
Yeah, well, it's not, again, Donegal Catch is a great company, but it's just one, and they produce many, many, many products, great products. It's just one specific product, and that's called the Four Atlantic Salmon Fillets in a Barbecue Spice Marinade. There was an alert, but it wasn't a recall, and that's what generated the thing. And it's that's the situation, and it's up to the FSAI. They've got the power. They're the ones that are paid to do this. Ciarán, good meal, Margaret, and kind regards to you and your family. It's a great education
for
people
much.
As well. Niall McMonagall was on sound. Richie Byrne was the researcher. Today's show was produced by Emily Phelan, and the series producer is Annette Egan. Ray Darcy is next.